You are listening to Conversations in the Gospel of John, Episode 2. This episode was recorded in the spring of 2023 at Friends University in Wichita, Kansas. Welcome to Conversations in the Gospel of John, where we want to bridge the gap between current academic research and contemporary proclamation of this wonderful text. My name is Stan Harstein, and my co-host is Douglas Estes.
I'm Douglas, and I currently teach at Friends University. I have a PhD in theology from the University of Nottingham. In addition, I was worked as a pastor for about 16 years prior to becoming a professor.
I've been involved with teaching and preaching in Baptist congregations for the past 30 years. Currently, I teach at Friends University in Wichita, Kansas, and hold a PhD in biblical studies from Baylor University. We're so thankful that you're choosing to listen to our conversation. Douglas, why don't you introduce our guest?
Today we have with us Irby Valdez. I had the honor of being on his PhD examination committee. Irby, welcome to the show. And if you'd like to share with us a little bit of your background and your research interests, that'd be great.
Yes, well, thank you, both of you, for the invitation. And it's an honor to be here with you this morning. And again, my name is Irby Valdez, and I serve currently as senior pastor at New Spirit Church in San Antonio, Texas. I've served as pastor there for the past 5 years. I felt a call to ministry back in 2013 and attended Southwestern, where I earned a master's in theological studies and a master's of divinity there, and went on to Liberty University to earn a master's in theology. And recently, I completed my PhD in New Testament Biblical Studies at Columbia International University.
Well, that's pretty exciting. So the main thing we're interested in today is, what caused you to be interested in the Gospel of John way back then?
Yes, well, I've always held a fascination with the fourth gospel. It was always striking to me how unique it was in comparison to the synoptics. And I think that that really grew whenever I attended Liberty University. I want to credit and thank Dr. Leo Purser, a professor there, who, when I studied the Gospel of John under his wing, I was fascinated with how he brought it to life. I think it started from there, and it just has grown even more so now as a pastor.
Well, that's pretty exciting, because what we're trying to do with this podcast is to make the Gospel of John accessible, to give that spark to people in ministry who wanting to preach it, but they haven't read anything recently, and perhaps they weren't so blessed as you were to have someone who made the Gospel of John an exciting and moving type of text for us. So that's pretty exciting. What lens do you use when you're studying the Gospel of John? Because one of the things we want to help our people know is just the methods that our guests are engaged in.
Sure, yes. I've always gravitated towards a sociocultural approach to the Gospels. In my preaching, I think that one of my goals is to bring the scripture to life. And you know, John's Gospel is a theological goldmine for preaching. I mean, it is filled with just amazing stories and encounters of people with, you know, from all different backgrounds who encounter Jesus and are forever transformed in many ways. And so that we're not only remembering that these are stories that are sharing people's encounters with Jesus, eyewitness testimony, but that it's also speaking to a community that was set at a certain time, at a certain place, and that we need to seek to understand the scriptures in their own setting and not just pluck it out and try to interpret it from our modern context.
So you mentioned a couple of words here, sociocultural and narratological. Let's break it down for our listeners, you know, who may not have the benefit of having studied those methods. Can you give a brief definition for those methods? And then once you do, let's talk about how you would apply those methods in the proclamation in a local church.
Sure. So when we talk about a sociocultural approach, what we're looking for is trying to understand the setting. In the case of John's Gospel, for example, in my work, I presented a case for John's Gospel being written in a specific place and a specific time. In other words, I petitioned for a chronological and a geographical distinction that shaped the way the gospel was formed. And so when we look at the sociocultural approach, we're looking at what was life like at that time? What does the text tell us about the way life was at that time? Because many times we're seeing engagements, we're seeing dialogue, and it maybe doesn't really ring a bell to us, especially now we're divided over 2,000 years, and we're in a totally different context, a social context. And so we have to really, I think, seek the way that the author intended for his initial primary readers to understand the text that was written. And when we look at a narratological approach, I think narratological here in the case of being a subset of literary criticism, it's the telling of a story to try to simplify the approach. We're dealing with the story, so we're dealing with plots and characters and so forth. So we can't forget that. We can't forget if we pluck things apart and we forget that it's a story being told about a true historical encounter with Jesus, with the aim to bring people to the belief that Jesus was the Messiah, then we can lose the essence, the flavor of what the Gospels were intended to do. And as a pastor, I think we have to be responsible on both ends. We have to make sure that we're bringing the story to life to the people who hear it, but at the same time, that we're not getting so involved in our critical method that we're speaking over their heads or make it where it's not relatable to the people who hear it. It has to be relatable to the people who need to hear the gospel, the good news.
So really what I hear you saying is that even as scholars, we use sometimes big words, narratological, these types of things, but the practical value is immense because we're really just talking about how John wrote, let's just say where John wrote from, the time he wrote from. If we understand that culture, that helps us to appreciate what he's saying even better. And if we understand the way he tells stories, then that helps us to understand the gospel even better. And even anybody can appreciate that.
Yes, absolutely. I think that when we look, let me just give you a case in point and one that I'm sure both of you are familiar with. When we look at the Samaritan woman, her encounter with Jesus, it may be difficult for us to understand that at that time, there was a cultural divide between these two peoples, the Jewish people and the Samaritan people. We may not be able to understand or relate to that. So when we see Jesus reaching out to speak to this woman at the well, in those times, for a man to speak to a woman, in this case, not only a man speaking to a woman, but a Jewish man speaking to a woman, and in this case, Jesus, a rabbi, a teacher, speaking to a woman, it shocks her. She says, are you seriously speaking to me? She was in shock. And so we have to appreciate that context in order to be able to share that understanding with the folks. And we say, well, what does that matter? Well, it matters much because we see there that Jesus is available to everyone, that there is no culture, there is no person that is far or too far removed from the love and from the invitation of Christ's message.
Right, and I think what we're trying to do with this podcast is to do that bridge the gap. And we've, Douglas and I have talked about John 4 passage as a key idea that we may emphasize more and more throughout this podcast journey that we're on, because we are moving across a sometimes wide divide between those who study the gospel and those who preach and teach it, some of whom haven't really done much thinking about what John is for 20 or 30 years. Some of them didn't have any kind of good instruction at their seminary level in making the biblical text practical, though they may be great orators. And so I think that's a wonderful deal. So are you interested in John 4 at this time, or what is your favorite part of the gospel right now? What are you thinking about and meditating on more in your ministry there?
Yes, well, right now I'm actually working on a preaching series at our church called Encounters with Christ, and it is, you know, dealing with characters who encounter Jesus. But I'm already focusing and working on the prologue, and one of my character case studies in my doctoral work was on five characters, and of course the key character being Jesus. And so we see a wealth of knowledge of the character of God, and in this case specifically Jesus, being revealed to us in the prologue. And you know, I think of Stan, even in your book, I think of reading John through Johannine lenses. You talked about the both the approach of the diachronic and the synchronic approach, and again, we're dealing with mending two areas together, where you're looking at an fixed point in time, but we're also talking about an emerging community. And to me, the prologue brings that to life, because one of the beauties of the prologue is it not only sets the interpretive tone for the rest of the gospel, but I think it reveals that creative and divine element of Jesus as that Logos incarnate, you know, and so to me, it has to start there.
Well, let's talk about the prologue, and thank you for that unpaid advertisement on my book. I appreciate that. It's always good to know somebody read it. When you write those books, they're kind of out there. But when we look at the prologue, as you were talking, the passage that I kind of jumped in my head was 1:14, where the Word became flesh, and I like to say tabernacled with us, which really means God was no longer limited to a single holy place in Jerusalem, but he was moving around and visiting the people, almost Abraham view of the oaks at Mamre when he came walking through. But so how do you take, and how would you appropriate some of the ideas about that verse, John 1:14, Christ living among us in a teaching opportunity with someone?
Yes, well, one of the things that I try to emphasize in our congregation is that our goal should be to further understand the character of God, not as we want him to be, but as God has revealed himself to be. So there's this divine revelation of the glory of God found in Jesus, and he's now made the previously unseen God now known to humanity. That's verse 18, and so I think that's the beauty of that text.
I think one of the other elements that I find in that is when you just look at the word became, that phrase, that's how the Septuagint, the Old Testament in Greek, introduces many of the prophetic sayings. So when someone who was familiar with that, the word became, the word became, the word became, right? Then all of a sudden the word became flesh. It's like, oh my, we have this propheticness of God's words to the people to be in covenant with him, to be in conversation with him, to be in communion with him, is now walking across the plateaus and hills of that ancient land. And that's quite a shocking statement.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, to me, right now, working on the sermon series, I identify three beautiful characteristics of Jesus's character. It's you know, we see his glory made known. We see that he's full of grace and truth. So we see glory, grace, and truth. That's, you know, verses 14, 16, and 17. And so what we see here now is really the glory of God made known in Jesus. And so when we look at the primary descriptor of God's character in the Torah, it's consistent. There's this steadfast mercy and grace and truth. And so to me, especially when I look at his capsule description in Exodus 34:6, he's the compassionate and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in grace and truth. And that chesed ve'emet is a description that is echoed with Jesus.
Okay, so let me follow up then, because I think you well articulated the socio-rhetorical method, and how there's a practical application in the teaching and proclamation of it in the local church. But let me ask about another area, which is narratological. So many listeners may not be aware, but character studies in the Gospel of John have been a big issue for the last decade. It's been a hot topic, if you will, among...
Three decades.
Okay, fair. It's been a hot topic for some time. That's right. Dr. Hartstein kicked it off, right?
No.
But anyway, it's been a hot topic for some time in the Gospel studies. But let me present a scenario, okay? The average pastor gets up in front of church on a Sunday morning, and he's facing a bunch of people who just kind of want three or four, okay, Pastor, what do I have to do this week? Tidbits, right? Follow me so far? Okay. How do you make characters come alive when you proclaim the gospel, and why is it important? Not just the word. I mean, because with Jesus, we kind of get a pass because everybody expects we're going to talk about the character of Jesus, but Jesus and the rest of the characters in John, how do we make that come alive? Why is it important?
Great question. Wow, I'm going to do my best to try to answer that. That's a great question. I think that there are two things that immediately come to mind. First is that the characters have to be defined by the measure of Jesus. So again, going back to Nicodemus, he comes to Jesus, and here is what Jesus says. You're the teacher of Israel. And then, of course, in his encounter with Jesus, he can't understand this idea of being born again or born from above. And yet Jesus says, you're the teacher of Israel, and yet you don't understand these things. So what does that teach the modern listener? What are the things that I need to do? And I think that Dr. Hartstein said it well. In many ways, we need to simplify our faith and always remember, it's not Jesus plus things. It's Jesus, and Jesus is sufficient. I think that's what we're seeing in his revelation. We forget, for example, that John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, number one, was spoken by Jesus directly. And number two, it was spoken to Nicodemus for a purpose. So here is the God who gives, and what does he give? But he gives a son who saves. And in both contexts there, we see a revelation of this beautiful function of the relationship between Jesus and God. And each one of them, although they're both ontologically God, they're both different and unique in their function. And so the second thing that comes to mind, and when we look at how we can connect this in a modern context, that preacher gets up and he says, what are the two or three things? We watch each one of these characters and we say, where were things done right and where did things go wrong? And so in many ways, I see these characters' encounters as a measure of how we should approach and learn in our own lives on how to properly approach Christ.
Okay. So I like to say and tell my students this, that if I were able to go to 100 churches in my community this Sunday simultaneously, that 97 of them would be covering a one of Paul's letters. There's a whole canon out there, right? Okay, so we miss a lot of times these things. So this comes to my question. When we look at John 1, John 4, take your pick. If we were to go into 100 churches, what would 97 of them be missing that's so critically important in your experience, like in John 1?
I think that the way that it was intended to be spoken to the original audience, I mean, we can read that and we can develop it in its theological frame. But what we don't understand sometimes is that this was spoken to a specific community. What they be missing here is an understanding of how the first readers would have interpreted that. They would have understood at this time that Jesus in his totality is not missing in any kind of way his human nature, his divine nature, and how he was made revealed to this, not only to the original context here, but what those implications are for the readers today. So, for example, we see when we read verse 9 through 10, that the true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and yet the world did not know him. So what would that mean to the reader today? Well, here's the true light. In other words, we can't see. If we can't see God, then we can't see ourselves. And I know that if my congregation were listening to this, they would laugh because they know what I always say. If you don't know God, then you cannot know yourself. Our understanding of who we are has to be by the measure of who Jesus has revealed himself to be. And I think that that connection has to be made from the pulpit, that we have to explain to people that our notion, when we say, for example, Jesus, not every faith, when they say the word Jesus, is speaking of the same thing. Different faiths, when they say Jesus, are going to be describing a different person. And so what is the prologue revealing to us is saying this is the objective revelation of the character of Jesus as God, you know, as God presents him. So it's I don't want to say it's a take it or leave it kind of deal, but it is, because we have to accept Jesus on his terms, not our own. And I think that probably would be missing from a lot of pulpits if they don't understand that was John's original purpose. This is Jesus as he is, not as you want him or expect him to be, but as who he has revealed himself to be. And then from there, I think, begins the walk with truth.
That sounds pretty good. Thank you for preaching to us, Irby.
I'm sorry.
Well, no, your practice, when you're working on something, it becomes part of what you just, I mean, everything you think gets drawn to that. And so we appreciate you taking some time for our conversation with the Gospel of John, and look forward to having other conversations. And it was great to meet you and to visually see you on this little computer that we have. And so I'll switch it back to me. And we want to wish you well. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Irby.
Thank you so much, both of you. You've been a tremendous influence in my studies and my growth, and best to the both of you. Blessings.
Douglas and I want to thank you for joining us for episode 2 of Conversations with the Gospel of John. Alicia Myers from Campbell Divinity School in North Carolina will join us on our next episode. We look forward to that conversation and hope you will join us. Bye now.